This is the Gravy for the Brain podcast.
I just want to start off by asking you how you got into this business. Do you remember your first professional gig?
My first professional job would be at the Royal Exchange in Manchester.
Can you hold that?
It would be at the Royal Exchange in Manchester. This is how I got into it. You just hold that near your mouth. We'll be at the Royal Exchange in Manchester. I went to Manchester Poly Drama School, and then my first job was at the Royal Exchange.
That was not voiceover work.
No.
Did you train as an actor then?
I went to Manchester Poly School of Theatre, so I didn't train as an actor. It was a terrible school. Really.
It was
awful.
A wonderful school.
Oh.
Not when I was there.
Brilliant when I was there.
All right.
So you went into professional theatre. You were acting in rep, I guess.
No, I never did rep. I left school with no qualifications. I left school at 15. I went to work for my dad, and my dad deliberately gave me the most dangerous jobs he could think of to try and make me grow up and realise what a mistake I'd made. And I used to change tractor tyres in the winter out in the fields. And when you inflate a big tractor tyre, there's a very good chance of losing your fingers because it pings off and there's a metal rim you've got to hammer in. And I was doing this at 15, and that was the moment I thought, oh, right, I know, I've fucked this up, haven't I? I've really made a mess of this. So then from 15, I worked for my dad for a couple of years. Then he fired me, which is the best thing that ever happened. Then I worked in a supermarket, I worked in a factory. I hitchhiked to Paris to join the Foreign Legion. I didn't. We were really lucky. The sergeant who was on the gate was from Croydon. Because he had the white kepi on and everything. He looked fantastic.
He said when he spoke, he said, "The fuck are you two doing that?
You want to join the Foreign Legion?"
Oh no, boys, listen, no, you don't, you really don't.
So he gave us 5 francs to get a cup of coffee.
So he said, "Look here, come get a cup of coffee, give it a real good think, all right? Because it's 5 years, you get a new identity, that's bollocks."
So we went away and we didn't join the Foreign Legion, we hitched back home to Berlin. Then I lived on a kibbutz for a while. Then I lived rough on Crete. Then
Blimey, this is going on a bit, isn't it?
Sorry.
We're in 1958.
Yeah.
Where are we at at this point? This is 63, is it?
Then I hitchhiked through Europe. I got nicked in Austria. I got put into jail in Austria for 3 nights. Came home. And
what for, though?
It was at a beer keller. They were at a beer keller. And they said, "Does anybody have any requests for the band?" I said, "Yeah, play the Horse Vessel song." And this guy smacked me right in the mouth, right across the table. The Horse Vessel song is the Nazi marching theme. I thought it was funny. And a fight broke out. And of course, being the only Englishman, I got arrested. So I had three days in this prison. Not prison, like police cells. Then I hitched back to Carlisle and thought, what the hell am I going to do? I thought, I've been fired from everything. And I thought, actually acting, you can't get... I thought you couldn't get fired from acting.
So what was the first job that you got fired from?
The Royal Exchange.
That brings us nicely back to where we began about 10 minutes ago.
I was in a play called... what was it called? It was about Falklands, a play about the Falklands. It shows you what it was, 1982. And we had to be paratroopers, and we had all this kit on, guns and stuff like that. But at the Royal Exchange, there's really long banisters. And I used to slide down the banister. And I came sliding down the banister in all the kit, and I saw Mike Sweeney at the bottom of the banister. And I thought, I won't disturb the audience and shout, "Get out of the way, Mike. I'll just crash into him." So I crashed into him, and his gun fell on the floor and then shot onto the stage. And I got fired. Yeah, fired from that.
Did the gun, was that called a negligent discharge? So, okay, so there you are in the Royal Exchange, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then when did you first... You obviously were fired from there. And then sort of skip forwards to your first kind of voiceover job. What was that?
Well, what happened was I came to London and rocketed to obscurity. And a friend of mine had a commission from Mel and Griff, remember them, to write. And I'd always written comedy. And I said, okay, I'll come in with you. And we wrote for Mel and Griff. But Mel and Griff had a production company called Playback. Then they had Talkback. And we used to write radio commercials for them. So I used to write loads of radio commercials. And then one day I found out what the person on the other side of the glass got paid for doing what seemed to me nothing. So I thought, well, I could do that. So that was that. And I can't remember what my first voiceover was. I think it was for Fruit of the Loom t-shirts, the original t-shirts in 1851. Yeah, it was for Fruit of the Loom t-shirts.
And that was
at the old Angel Studios on Floral Street.
I remember them well. Yeah. Nick Angel.
Yeah.
So that was your first exposure to voiceover, and then you sort of decided then that was the career path you wanted to follow.
No,
no, you didn't.
No, I didn't get fired from Fruit of the Loom. I never saw it as a career. I didn't know there was a career to be had from it. I thought it was just an adjunct to acting.
To acting, yeah.
And then I met more and more people who were doing it. I thought, actually, yeah. Hang on, you don't have to wash. You don't have to shave. You have to be on time. There's free sweets and fruit and coffee and really nice girls behind the desk. I quite like that. So I thought it was something I'd pursue. But it wasn't for the money. It was it's always been about girls and money. Now it's just money. But it was always about girls, and I just thought, this is a chance to meet really nice girls.
And so, sorry, I'm not going to go down that route, but it's true. So, but you've enjoyed a career which you've spent time in front of the mic, and also you've done acting work as well. You've done in front of camera work as well.
Yeah.
So, which do you prefer? Or do you
what I find now with voiceover is that you're so often on your own. It used to be that you'd work with people and you'd see people and stuff like that, but now you're very much on your own. I prefer working with people. I love doing the Octonauts because it's a gang of us. I also love the fact that when we do the Octonauts, there's only two of us get paid for worldwide and the others don't. And I always make a point of asking the other chap who gets paid for worldwide, have you had your money through yet? Have you had the money through for America? I haven't had, oh, you're out, good, yeah, I haven't had mine yet. Hi, everyone. So there's always that little moment of pleasure. I enjoy working with people. I just enjoy working and having fun, being creative and doing stuff and getting stuff back from people.
But you are principally known for your character work. You're a great character actor, obviously, and you're great at accents. Any tips or tricks? How do you develop accents and characters?
My advice would be to play with yourself. Seriously, play with yourself. See what you can do. Change, and because you can do lots of different voices. You can change your voice, but then start changing the shape of your mouth and do faces and see what that does to the voice. And because
it's a great Scottish accent.
There we are, you see? Because we're all born with a Stradivarius. People say, oh, can you play an instrument? Yes, you can. You've got a voice, and your voice is so fantastic. Your voice can do anything. And, you know, we're all born with this Stradivarius, but we tend to chuck it in the back of the car like a bag of cement. We don't look after it. And your voice can do anything. You can do all sorts with it. And go mad. Go crazy. See how high you can make your voice go. See how gruff you can make your voice go. see what your voice sounds like if you've got really big teeth. Do stuff like that. Don't just do the voice. Do the face. Do the mouth. Do everything. Do the walk. Do the physicality.
Yes.
So play with yourself. My other word of advice would be listen. Don't hear. Listen. A lot of people don't actually listen to what people say. Most people actually don't listen. They're just waiting to say what they want to say. And the great gift is to listen. Not hear, listen. Actually listen to what people are saying, and you can learn an awful lot.
And talking of listening, you know, how often have you
been... Sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
How often have you been... how often have you been in the street, as I have? You know, you've heard somebody on a bus or on a tube train or on a train, or just walking along the street behind
you. Oh, yeah.
And you hear, that's an incredible voice. And I've actually taken a detour or listened and lingered a little bit longer. Just to, I have, really.
Have you tried this one in court?
That's a really great voice.
Has this ever worked as a defence?
No.
Well, yeah, absolutely, because we're surrounded by characters. Everybody's a character. Everybody's got a different voice. And also, my other piece of advice would be to use bad English, because people use bad English. Yeah. You know, it's like £15. Stress, you know, stress is coming in now. Yeah. It's very strict.
Stress.
It's the it's everywhere. But you know, okay, we hate it, but use it as a character, use it as a thing. You know, if you want to be like somebody, like young, you know, you've got to use that stuff. You got to, like, drag it up. I was on the train not that long ago, and there was two white kids in front of me, and they were like, do you know what I'm saying, man? Do you feel me? Do you get me? Do you know what I'm saying? I thought, for fuck's sake, yes, he understands you. He feels you. He gets you. Get to the point. But it was all like that.
They never do get to the point.
They never
These
do get to the point.
It's just posturing and words. They don't mean anything. It's quite fascinating to me. I love listening to conversations on trains. So watch. If you see me on the same train as you, just be careful.
Because
we're listening very carefully.
And Peter will say, what the hell are you doing in first class?
You've worked in almost all the genres, but have you ever done an audiobook?
No, I couldn't sponsor it for that long. No, not hard. No, also, I get really fed up with my voice. I get really... No, I just... No.
I'm like you.
I probably wouldn't come back after lunch. I'd probably just run off and go and ring my agent and go, look, they're really horrible. They made me read all morning. No, I've never done an audiobook.
It's one of the most difficult... I think one of the most difficult things to do, particularly, you know, long-form projects like that, to keep that going for that length of time.
I admire the skill, and when you hear Stephen Fry doing the Harry Potters, it's wonderful, and it draws you in. And I do admire that skill, but it's not for me. I can't keep it up.
What job's been the most fun then, if you haven't done all your work? What do you enjoy working in?
I enjoyed a cartoon series I did called Modern Toss.
You did Monkey Dust with me.
I did Monkey Dust with you, yeah. But Monkey Dust I'm very proud of, but Modern Toss I enjoyed the most, because it's by John Link and Mick Bunnage, who are artists. They're artists, so they know nothing about voice work or acting or anything like that, and they just give you the most weird bits of direction.
You go, yeah, can you make that? You've done a voice like a pigeon. Can you do that again?
When did I do a voice like a pigeon?
like ages ago. Do that.
I used to do Monsieur Tourette.
And Monsieur Tourette.
Monsieur Tourette was a sign writer, but his Tourette's only came out when he wrote a sign. And they said,
he's a French geezer, right? So he just like speaks French, but it's got not to be French, okay? It's just going to like sound like French, but not be French.
So that was Monsieur Tourette. And then he had to meet people every week. That was the pigeon voice. And it was brilliant. It was such an exercise. I had to come up with all these different French characters and then make them all talk to each other, but not use any French words. And I thought, this is a fabulous exercise in insanity. It's just brilliant.
Sounds rather like that show I did called Ooglies for BBC. Has anybody seen that?
Oh, yeah, I've seen Ooglies.
And I looked at the brief. It looked easy. You know, you just go up there and you just make a load of noises. But after 5 days of doing that, looking at these little characters jumping around the screen, you weren't allowed to use any English words.
Nope.
It had to be just those emotive sounds, and that's one of the most
difficult things. It's a great exercise. Because
it's good, it's about improvisation. It taxes your
brain.
So okay. I think improvisation is a great thing to learn, isn't it? If you can join an improv club or have you ever done improv?
Yeah, I have, but it didn't go fabulously well. I fancied the girl in the group, which is why I went. it's not going to there. No, it didn't go fancy well. But Monkey Monkey Dust was good.
Monkey Dust.
Monkey Dust, I'm very proud of.
I'm very proud of Monkey Dust. It was a, and still is, a seminal sort of cartoon series that was produced by a friend of ours, Harry Thompson.
Because Harry Thompson would put you through the ringer. He'd make you do it again and again and again.
Yeah.
Like, go again, do
and
it
even
again,
though we disagreed with him at the time, I think looking back on it, he was probably right.
Oh, yeah, he was
a genius. And if you haven't seen Monkey Dust, I really recommend you watch it as an exercise in really good animation.
And it was way ahead of its time. We were doing,
it still looks current.
We were doing all the jihad stuff before it had even kicked off.
Very hard to do.
We might have started it.
Yeah, might have started jihad stuff. A few more questions. How has the industry changed for you in the last 10 years? Have you noticed any change in the way your work comes in, your workflow?
There's a lot more, because I was watching the presentation, there's a lot more auditioning from home. Can you put something on tape? Can you just do it a little bit? And it's an element of laziness, but it's also, they do want to have the luxury of choice. And it's very easy to go, well, I don't do that kind of thing. I don't really understand that. I don't know anything about it. It's not my thing. Oh, I'm not going to do it. It's my version of self-harming. No, I'm not going to do it. But you've got to. You've got to embrace it. You've got to do it. You've got to get it. You know, get a good recorder, because on your phone isn't good enough. I've learned that you can do what you like, and on your phone is just not good enough. It's got to be clearer. And actually, the clearer it is, the better it is. It just puts you a jump ahead of everybody else. And it is a big pool.
Yeah. And finally, do you have anything you haven't done yet in this business you'd like to do? Any ambitions that you haven't fulfilled yet?
I haven't done an American animation. A big film.
Join the queue. Yeah.
Yeah. I've done Aardman stuff, which is good.
Yes.
He's a bit OCD. Nick Park. He's on the spectrum. Nice enough, but just says weird stuff.
Well, I think you've got to be, you know. You
and he moves. He just moves a tiny bit.
He moves like that. Good. Quite twitchy movement.
I'd like to do one of the big. I don't know how it works. I mean, somebody's got to do these jobs. Somebody's got to voice these big movies. But mind you, but with American animation now, there's kind of one every month where. When I was a kid, there was one every year if you were lucky, and it has become slightly diluted. Although, you know, there's good stuff like Paddington's great. Paddington's really good, but the big cartoon stuff I've never done. I mean, I could be wishing for the worst job of my life, but no.
Mm. Well,
just keep going. That's what it's about.
It's just keeping going. That's the.
And also, try not to work with any actors who wear a hat indoors. Is there a better way? They're usually a bit on. And I spend most of the morning just looking at their hat like that. You know, you still get your hat on.
I find it very difficult to put headphones on when I'm wearing a hat, particularly a trilby. Simon, thank you so much for talking to us.
That was the Internet Radio Show from gravyforthebrain.com. Don't forget to check out our other great podcasts.